Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, survivors, followers, and all the caregivers that have been tuning in to the TBI One Love podcast, which, as you know, is spreading a positive form of hope, inspiration, and education to those that have been touched by a brain injury, and of course, awareness and prevention. Hard to believe we're already kicking off our October segment. I hope everyone has been enjoying the kickoff to the new season, excited for all the opportunities that are coming towards the end of the year, and most importantly, this is the enjoyable month of Halloween. And we've got not only our usual first and third Monday segments, but there's five Mondays in October. So we have not only tonight's segment, we have the next one on the 17th, and then to end, it's going to be a real treat, not a trick, because it's on Halloween. That's right. It's an exciting treat for everyone. There is no trick at all. But let's focus on tonight's show. To kick off our October segment, we're having a phenomenal researcher and pathologist who not only handles both of those and does research in the neurological cognitive communication disorders associated with stroke, brain injury, and other conditions. She also, as I mentioned, is a speech pathologist lecturer at the University of Technology in Sydney. That's right. You heard me. Sydney. She's calling in from Sydney, Australia. So I hope everyone is really excited, not only, of course, for all that she's going to be able to share, but most importantly, we're getting our guests from the other side of the world. So without further ado, let's get this show started and welcome in Dr. Emma Power from the University of Technology, Sydney. Dr. Power, can you hear me?
Oh, yes, I can, James. Thank you so much for having me on.
No problem, Dr. Power. Thank you for taking time out of your schedule, and as I know it's the beginning of the day over there, but allowing us and our listeners to really learn some of your inspirational guidance.
Thank you. I'm really pleased to be here, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity to speak to people across the globe, not just in my own country.
Amen. Well, you heard me give a little brief description about some of what you do. Would you mind, before we kick off, giving a little bit more insight of your passion?
Well, I'm a speech pathologist, as you said, and my role is work in partnership with people who have communication and swallowing impairments, to understand their impairments through assessment and diagnosis with them, and then work with them and their family, friends, and other professionals to facilitate intervention goals that maximise their participation and well-being. So my job is not to work to do things to people, it's to work with them so that their communication can be something that enables their participation in life. And that's my focus and of my passion. But obviously you've got me on here because I have an interest in neurological communication impairments. And they usually are caused by brain injury and stroke, as you said, but also dementia. So my clinical research centres on developing assessment and treatment programs, but also I do qualitative research, and that is really to highlight the lived experience of brain injury survivors and their families, as well as the clinicians that work with them. So all of those things together are part of what I'm really passionate about. But the last thing is that I'm a teacher. So I also teach the next generation of speech pathologists as an academic at my university, and I provide workshops for clinicians. So my passion is in asking questions about what's going on here, how can we help, how can we make our life better for stroke survivors and brain injury survivors, and then how can I teach that so that more people get good evidence-based care.
Wow, and that's not only very inspirational, but your tone, you can tell, because energy is everything, but also the availability that you're helping it with the now, but also continuing on with current and future generations to really grasp on the importance of communication disorders that are associated with different aspects like you just labeled and like we had mentioned, but most importantly, to really keep it going to help anyone that has to battle that journey.
That's right, and students are our future. And they need to have a great foundation so that they can walk out and respectfully work with and learn from brain injury survivors and their families so that they can actually, do the best for the future. And I think that we have some great future speech pathologists out there, as with many other professions, and I take that responsibility really seriously. And that's why I have people with lived experience of brain injury come into the class as well, to ensure that there are all the voices that are important to the evidence, and that is mine as a researcher, but also people with brain injury experience and their family members. They come in as well to teach the students. So it's really about a team effort. The whole thing is a team effort. We cannot do any of this stuff without the team.
Exactly. Team is always important. And that, like that famous saying, teamwork helps makes the dream work.
That's right. Yep. And I am not I don't know everything, you know, and I don't want to in a way. I like the idea that everyone has their own piece of the puzzle to bring to make life better for people with brain injury.
Exactly. You know, and speaking of your teamwork, would you mind sharing some of your clinical and research expertise more in depth?
Yeah, I mean, what I like to do is we have different ways of working, and some of the things that we're really concerned about is that there are communication impairments that follow brain injury, and I'll just outline a few of them so you can see the kind of things we work on. The first thing is some people will have speech impairments. So they'll actually have slurred speech, which is called dysarthria. Others will have, you know, and that's because they've been, you know, damaged and the muscles are weak. But there's a thing called apraxia of speech, where people have trouble programming speech movements. And then there's a thing called aphasia, and that's a language impairment that can occur in brain injury, especially if the language networks of the brain are affected. And so those people might have problems reading, writing, making sentences and understanding. So those three things are actually quite common as well. But the most common thing that occurs after brain injury is that they have issues above the level of the sentence. We call them discourse and conversation level issues. So the strength of often people with brain injury is that they can use words and sentences and they can read and they can do things like that. But sometimes due to cognitive impairments like attention, processing, memory and executive function, people, if you can't remember things, it's harder to have much to say in a conversation. So your communication is affected by your cognition and your thinking. And you might, if you have no, you know, memories for things that are easily coming to you, then you might speak very generally and confuse people, or you might jump in really quickly because you want to say what you have to say before you forget, or the conversation's already moved on and you don't really participate. So what we know in brain injury is that the thinking problems that come with the brain injury can affect your ability to interact socially in communication with people. And so that is the area that I'm most interested in, because it's fascinating, isn't it? If you think about it, where would we be without our ability to interact with people? It's the basis of everything we do. So it's part of our work, our family lives, our relationships, our intimate lives, our friendships. And so I think my area of research is really about saying, how can we make these difficulties that occur after brain injury less impactful on people's lives so that they can interact more? And a lot of the things that we work on can be around helping people to, say, structure their narrative, their stories that they tell, that to be able to tell someone what you did in a day and without confusing them. Some people after brain injury can talk a lot and not see the cues of someone else that they want to turn, like this we call social cognition. And so we can help them recognise that so that they can have more equal conversations and not dominate, which pushes people away. So there's lots of different aspects of how we can help. And so my research focuses on what can we do to help people, you know, manage their communication better. But the flip side of it is, and I don't know if any of your listeners have experienced it, no one often tells communication partners, friends, families and other professionals how to manage this change. So a lot of our research is really about saying, okay then, after brain injury, let's give you some information. Let's actually give you some skills, because we find that people can sometimes talk down to people with brain injury. or not include them properly because they feel like they won't be able to communicate well enough, or they might actually ask some testing questions. So, for example, one of my clients said to her son, "Do you know when your birthday is?" And he couldn't remember. And then he tried and he guessed it, and she went, "Yes, that's good. That's a testing question." Wouldn't it be much more exciting and more, I don't know, affirming to be able to say your birthday's coming up, you know, have you thought about what you want to do and where you want to go out? That's different, you know, that's a different feeling together. So what we do in a lot of our research is we actually help communication partners to learn about brain injury communication, have strategies so that conversations can go better. And if you're conversing with someone who is helping you subtly in a really cool kind of way, then you're getting good practice. You're getting a lot more practice than you get in your 1 hour a week therapy session. So we believe it's also a really positive for recovery as well.
Oh, yeah, it is. And I think it's also great how you just mentioned you're having individuals involved, because it's not only literally a visual example, but it also shows the differences of how everyone responds differently, different tone, different wording, but also, like the example you said, different questionnaires are a completely different aspect, but also a different response. And with having it be associated with communication errors after a brain injury are very important, because even though it might look like they understand on the outside, it is a whole different ball game on the inside.
Yeah, and we really need to make our communication accessible to people who might not be able to follow as quickly as they used to, who might not be able to process in the way, you know, and our lives and our society is so fast-paced. We know a lot of brain injury survivors say, "I just need people to slow down." And so some of the goals I work on with communication partners are to literally say a smaller amount and pause in between so that you can give your daughter a chance to have a say. And then they can feel more equal. And we've found that in our research, we've actually created some training programs. One is called TBI Express, and we did that was 15 years ago, and that's a group training program to help communication partners. But then we realized that not everyone could come to us. So we developed another one called TBI Connect, and that one was done over telehealth. So we're using technology to help. Because we do a lot of videoing. You know, communication is something that you do verbally and non-verbally. And people with brain injury, they have memory problems. They can't always remember what happened to reflect on it to try and work out how to improve. And so we often use videos to help their communication partners too see things that you might not be able to see in the moment. And that's another way. So with telehealth, we were able to do some of the video-based training over that. But then after that, we also saw it's a lot of time for everyone, and we ended up coming up with this thing called the Social Brain Toolkit.
And
it's actually three standalone training programs. One of them's called Interactability, and it's a self-directed online training program. It's 2 hours for anyone who wants to actually communicate with someone with acquired brain injury for aphasia, dysarthria, all these cognitive communication, social communication disorders. And if you want to do that, you can do that online at your own time, in your own way.
Wow.
And it has lots of videos of people with communication problems. It's not just the researchers out the front. We step back. It's got people with lived experience explaining these things to people as well, so that, you know, you have more, that's more credibility there of actually everyone having a voice in what helps communication. We then have another program, James, it's called Sociability. And I don't know if you've had experience, but we know that people with brain injury can be quite vulnerable to communicating and operating over social media. There are a lot of scams out there, and there are a lot of things like that can take people in, and many people can be affected. And we want people to be confident and safe. We don't want people to avoid social media. It's a fantastic opportunity to communicate. So we've actually made a program which helps people to feel more confident and learn about how to use it and to spot things that might not be quite right. And The final version is conversability. It's our 10-week comprehensive program. So sometimes you need more time and training to learn new skills. So communication partners work with the person with brain injury, and you do online e-learning modules, and then you meet with a speech pathologist to work through some of those things, practice, have conversations, and that one is actually an aim of having more enjoyable and rewarding and productive conversations. So these now are online, and we've actually worked quite hard to develop these so that more and more people can access them, because brain injury is a huge problem worldwide, and we know that not everyone can get access to services, and so we want to provide as many different options as possible.
Wow, that's not only, all those are amazing, not only how it started a decade ago, but also there's been different styles, and I also think it's very helpful, and also, I'll be honest, impressive how you can get online and do it at your own time. Because that's one of the key aspects, not only in anyone's life, but also during the long road of recovery, both for the survivor, but most importantly for us caregiver, because, and I know you've had this statement that you taught, experience, et cetera, is people need to understand, and the only way to understand this is, unfortunately, having someone that's in their circle, their family, et cetera, a close friend, someone they spend a lot of time with being affected by a brain injury, to understand that it's not just the survivor that is affected. Everyone is affected. That's inside their lifestyle. So when you have this this toolkit that allows them to, most importantly, do it on their own time, because when they go through that life-changing aspect, and this goes for the caregiver, the family, you know, their circle, if you will, they have to try to not only keep their main life, but they also have to now adapt with the new needs and wants of giving their survivor the proper care. And what's sad is without this technology that you created, and I hope it gets spread everywhere it needs to, a lot of individuals, and I'm sure you've heard of this or know the situation as well, a lot of survivors get put into, sad to say this exact title, but a proper care system, where they don't live at home with their family. They live in like a nursing home. They're the youngest person in there, or they're the only one that is in their own ballpark. Their family still comes to see them so often, but after a while, it's maybe only big holidays, and it's rare. But with people like you and creating tools like this with the power of technology in the palm of their hand, this is going to hopefully be able to eliminate the need to try to manage your schedule by adopting them to their own medical kind of arena.
That's right, James. I mean, you know, we've got to be available. We've got to have things available for people when they need it in bite-sized forms. So interactability, which is free, and it's 2 hours worth, but you can do the modules a bit at a time. You don't have to do it all at once. And, you know, the modules include things like understanding brain injury, why your communication is important, because all of us have communication difficulties. It's not only people with brain injury. In fact, many of my clients, communication partners, said, oh, wow, I'm not fantastic at communication all the time either. And suddenly we have this shared, you know, sense of communication can break down. The important thing is, can you manage it so that you can have a positive way forward? So that's what, you know, we do. We talk about metaphors, like talk like a teammate, not like a school teacher. We want people to, you know, understand how to interact with people who communicate without speech, as well as people who have difficulty understanding and people who have difficulty with social communication. So the interactability program is a great first stop for people who haven't got a lot of time to actually get some knowledge. And there's some interactive tasks on there. You can do a quiz at the end and go, do I get this, you know? There's even a certificate there for people who might work with people with brain injury to sort of show that they've done some professional development to take a positive step towards increasing their own skills to work with people with brain injury. And you know what, we've got people with brain injury doing it themselves, saying, no one told me this information. And I get to see people like me on the screen. I mean, how empowering is that? So, yeah, I mean, we've had people say, you know, lots of good stuff about this, and we're going to keep working and improving it. We've actually worked with brain injury survivors to actually develop a lot of our programs. We really believe that's important. You might have heard of the words co-design. We're actually trying to co-produce interventions rather than just sending them out there, because the end users are the people who are going to make this happen. And so we listen to them to ensure that what we develop will actually get used. There's no point in having great evidence-based tools that sit in the bottom of a cupboard. So that's another part of our research, is ensuring that we get a lot of user feedback and that people with brain injury are part of the process. For example, one of my colleagues is actually a brain injury survivor, and she actually comes and teaches in the class, but she was also an author on one of our papers. So we're trying to, you know, increase the capacity of brain injury survivors in research to actually do that as well.
Wow. And see, again, is not only the powerful source of someone like you, we have a passion and you're setting a tone of something that needs to be enforced, but again, we have the power of technology literally in the palm of our hands, where we can grow with it and be more entertained with it and use it to our best ability. It's amazing what the outcome is.
That's right. Technology is a really critical thing for communication. There's some great research out there that kind of talks about the main technologies that people with brain injury mm-hmm. and their communication partners use. And, you know, I thought about it the other day. Like, we often do pen and paper tests, but how many people use pen and paper only in their lives? I mean, what about mm-hmm. online banking, internet shopping, sending a text to someone with a cool news story you want to comment about, emailing? What about dating? A lot of those things now are communication tasks that are mediated by technology. So we need to be in this space. And that's why, you know, my team, Professor Leanne Torr and Dr. Rachel Redake, we've started this process, but we have PhD students like Melissa Miao and others who are actually working towards saying, how can we make technology work? But we've got to listen to survivors. It's no good in just listening to us.
Exactly. You know, that's what a lot of research has always done, pros and cons. It's always done with getting somewhat involved, but it's mainly just doing, you know, the actual research, technology, I'm sorry, and some other mm-hmm. aspects. But I like how also with it, you're doing both of these. You're not only, like you just say, to get more of the survivors involved, to get on hand research mm-hmm. study instead of on decades, or this was done X amount of years ago, so forth, with mm-hmm. a certain amount of volunteers, et cetera. You're doing it now, so you're having it more active in today's world, because there's so many different ways of communication here, so many different cognitive challenges, so many different brain injuries, reactions, et cetera. But also, I think it's very helpful, again, that you're getting your students and also other people involved along with current survivors.
That's right. It's a team, like we've said, and you know, mm-hmm. you've talked about how important that is. And I think that at the end of the day, that's the only way that we'll make a difference. But also, researchers are looking to share these tasks in the future and not always be the epicenter of the work that we do. We want to work in partnership, and that's really important. It can be harder. It takes longer, and it mm-hmm. is more complicated, but the outcomes and also just the philosophy of saying we will work with you rather than do things to you is a really important one in the disability movement anyway. So mm-hmm. that's been a real positive thing for us. And what it allows is, you know, some of the technology is that in conversability, you can look at a video and watch it, and you can actually, and what we want to do in some of these things is get you thinking about who's doing the most talking. So after brain injury, sometimes the person with brain injury will do so much talking that it doesn't allow another person to have a word. But also, and that's what we call that verbosity. But the flip side is that some people lose the ability to say lots of things, and so the communication partner ends up doing all the talking. And so we get out of balance a bit. And so we have videos where people watch the video and they can actually pull along a little bar actively at the time they're watching it to sort of say who is talking the most. So there's more, we're trying to use little bits of technology to also make active learning a part of this. It's not just someone talking at you, these programs. It's having a go, trying it out so that you can actually learn, not just be told. So that's another important part of the programs too.
And, you know, and speaking of not only, well, first off, I agree with you, and that's very important, especially like how you labeled in the disability realm. It's very important for everyone to understand, and it kind of goes with how we discussed earlier, both teamwork and you don't judge a book by its cover. Just how it looks on the outside does not mean it's the same at all, good or bad, on the inside.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You go, James. Yeah.
No. Go ahead. I'm sorry, ma'am. I was just going to ask a question, but I want you to finish.
I think that the challenge for a lot of our clients is this nature of the invisible disability too. And
yes.
Cognitive communication difficulties, when the people often say to them, oh, but you look fine, which is terrible for some brain injury because they know that they don't feel fine. And some people have even said, oh, have you still got memory problems? They're going, yeah, you know, it's going to happen for a lot of my life, but I'm working on it. So I think that the invisible, you know, not judging a book by its cover too is important, but we have a problem of invisible disability that makes it really harder for people. So any awareness that we can get out there that communication difficulty can happen after brain injury, even if you perceive the person physically looks like they are not having an injury, then that's really important too. So I think it's part of it, the awareness. It's awareness around hidden disability that's important to people with brain injury and their carers as well.
I agree. Yes, ma'am. And, you know, and this kind of goes with that statement, not only, of course, with both social communication and cognitive communication challenges, but also with the invisible disability. So I understand with your work how you have people living with a TBI, part of your research and part of the teaching you're doing. So like you had mentioned, that your classmates understand and get to learn through that. The question I want to ask is, so when you're doing that with your classmates, I'm sure it helps both the survivor and, of course, the classmate improve their communication. But are there any ways that you also help either the actual survivor's family and, most importantly, if they're able, depends on their recovery, of course, but if they're able to work, is there any professional way that their communication can help them with their employer, if that makes sense?
Yeah, okay. So we know that communication is an integral part of a return to work and a lot of jobs these days. In fact, there's been a lot of research done around return to work in brain injury and the role of communication. And we do know that, in return to work that there are particular features that are important in work. People's ability to, you know, clearly explain things, have clarity of language, to have sensitive language, politeness markers, things that enable people to, you know, get along with people. All those things we take for granted, and the ability to concentrate and read over time. So communication's a really important part of return to work. And we know that cognitive communication can really affect that. And many of our jobs these days are not completely manual. They actually often require a lot of communication. So part of what we would do is we would do an assessment that looked at aspects of how the person was communicating and using thinking with communicating. And what we would do then is we would, establish some goals and work through to work out how are we going to help these people with their jobs. And in some cases, speech pathologists will work with employers directly for a return to work plan that includes tasks, reduced work hours at first. So one of my clients actually needed to have we call it metacognitive intervention. So she actually had a plan of her day. So she had to create a plan of her day. And then we actually had to get her listing out the tasks she had to do and how she thinks she would go in the day, and what she needed to do those tasks. All these things we take for granted, planning, thinking, writing down what our to-do lists, all those kind of things come naturally. But when you've had a brain injury, they all have to be things you think about and actually have guidance and structure with. And so we helped her to create these plans so that she could go in and work on her daily work tasks, and that she knew where she was up to, what she had to do. She kept a diary. It wasn't an electronic diary. It was too hard, so she started on paper. And so we worked through helping her with communication strategies. After her brain injury, she talked too much. She couldn't stop talking. And so we helped give her cues and things, to reminders that to keep it short and sweet. so that she practiced that, so that she actually got on with people at work as well. So there are lots of different things that we can do with brain injury survivors that apply communication interventions to work-based goals that people need to actually do their job. And that's certainly an area that speech pathologists can assist with, of course, with the other members of the team of occupational therapy and clinical neuropsychology, et cetera.
Wow, that's phenomenal. Now, with their assistance, like you had stated, with helping them get back and able to work, and that does take time, and of course, how every survivor is different. I'm just curious, how you had mentioned earlier, a social brain toolkit, is there any way that their employer or any of their employment team can kind of learn more about brain injuries or maybe even do some of those activities through the app with them to kind of show some compassion or build a bond that the survivor feels more at home, you could say, comfortable?
It's the perfect suggestion, James. I think, you know, you could certainly start with something like interactability, which is short, and you could do an employer and some staff members could do that. They could do it with the person, or they could do it separately and then have discussions about it with the person with lived experience of brain injury being the expert and actually answering their questions. You could also have it so that they do it without even talking to the person with brain injury, but they are learning and upskilling themselves in the knowledge of what might help and how to communicate. So you could certainly do both of those things. People that might work with people with brain injury, like sometimes some people go in a return to work role and they have a paid carer to help them. And so sometimes we might even do the longer conversability one with those people who are intensively working with a person with brain injury. So I think that we should be helping workplaces to understand communication after brain injury so that they can facilitate return to work, any accommodations that are required, as well as putting themselves just in a position of compassion and empathy, like you say, for what that person is doing. So people realise this isn't someone just trying to annoy them or not managing their tasks of the day. The brain injury really has made it hard, and we think that understanding and education is the key, and employers can certainly go and do that training program so that they can actually grow as well.
And I think that's a great suggestion, and also a great statement is how you said it can be either A or B, A without the survivor there. So it's really good for the employer and the team to really educate and learn more, especially because no one knows all of everything. People might say, hey, I think I know enough, I'm good. But if everybody knew 100% of everything and all there was to know, then life wouldn't be exciting. Every time you get to learn something new and everyone's different. But I think that's also a good scenario, how you said they can even do it either with the actual survivor or do it beforehand and have like a Q&A with them, because I think that's either it's going to show a symbolic symbol for both, not only so the survivor doesn't feel like, okay, only my family or my caregiver gets me, so when I go out I'm you know, literally in a completely lost area, nobody understands, I'm probably always doing something wrong, doubting myself, whatever the case may be, but it's going to show that, okay, look, we're here to help you and we understand you. So it's more, again, like we discussed, and it's a perfect example. It's all about teamwork.
Yep, that's right. And, you know, some brain injury survivors may not want to engage a lot with that, but some may actually find it really empowering to be in that expert role. We know that sometimes for people with disability, it can be exhausting to have to always explain themselves.
But in this context,
people are in relationships with people where if they know that someone has gone and done their own work first and made the effort, and then they're ready to have a conversation where the person with a brain injury is the expert in that, then I think that's a little bit different than people just demanding of people with disability to explain everything for them. You've got to actually do some of your own work, and interactability is a great opportunity for people to do that, and to show that you're willing to put in the effort as well to learn. And I think that's really important. But we know a lot of people with brain injury really actually gain a lot from helping other people to understand things. But in most cases, you know, we should really try and pay them for that in those and acknowledge that. But in these kind of relationship circumstances, there is a great opportunity for everyone to learn together and for everyone to be on the same team, as you say. And I think that, you know, depending, it's all dependent on what the brain injury survivor wants, but all of those options are out there.
And I think that's very powerful and unfortunately accurate. A lot of survivors do not want to really, how can I put this properly, really don't want to admit or be part of something that involves letting themselves be recognized as a survivor, because it is a lifelong episode. There is no finish line. There always is going to be ups and downs. And to get to where they are at this point or at any point in the recovery, it does take a lot of effort. But as we all know, that are involved with any form of the brain injury field, whether it's your aspect, the medical field, the technological field, the survivor field, there are a lot of negative mental stages because it is a lifelong invisible journey. And we live in such a judgmental environment that's been going on for decades, like we were discussing. But I think what I'm getting at is, like you stated, when the survivor really does anything that is involved with the brain injury, anything, and like we were just discussing, doing this in their professional, you know, arena, or doing something in their school, their community, whatever, it not only, again, brings forth more of a team so people understand what a brain injury is like, but also helps them feel better about themselves because they have the availability to where they feel accepted instead of, okay, I don't fit in because I look fine on the outside, but people don't get it. I mean, there's so many different scenarios with a brain injury or non-brain injury. Again, we live in such a judgmental environment. It's sad. That's the life everyone lives in. But I think it's very good mentally, physically, and emotionally for survivors to get involved because, like you stated, you're helping educate of a worldwide epidemic that everyone is at some form is either knowing someone that's going through a brain injury or was lost through a brain injury. So it's going to have a very positive impact. But most importantly, when one survivor does this, keyword, one survivor, people get to interact and understand what one type of a brain injury is like, because they do not match, as we know.
That's right. And I think that we would work with brain injury survivors and even in people, you know, and people who've had a stroke. So part of what people want is they want meaningful lives. And so for some people, that meaning might be about greater understanding of the brain injury condition. And so really it's about autonomy and providing people with choice, you know, in their goals. Is one of the, you know, and how they want to approach it. Do you want to people to know you have a brain injury, or do you want to work more subtly around that? There, as long as it's the brain injury survivor who is sort of leading some of that with good advice, then I think then that is the most important thing. And some people will choose to really become, you know, advocates in that way and self-advocates as well. And I think that it's really about autonomy, isn't it? You know, if that's something that you want to do, my job as a clinician is to support that.
Exactly. Now, as we've been discussing all this amazing impact of work, the technology you've created, the examples that you're giving for families, professionals, employers, students, current and future pathologists, researcher in the neurological cognitive communication field, I mean, everything that you do, I know that there are going to be a lot of people that want to learn more about, of course, how to keep up to date with your process and also like with this app and be able to use that in their field or in that business. Because like we discussed, brain injuries happen everywhere to anyone at any time. And not only just for a brain injury, but there are different types of people that do have, and it not saying brain injury, but like you mentioned, dementia, which I guess you say is a form of brain injury, but or concussion, stroke and ABI, et cetera, that do have social communication and cognitive communication challenges. I think that they're going to, what I'm getting at is I think they're going to want to not only stay in tune with your inspirational changes, but also be able to use this brain toolkit for their own self, for their own community, or when they have an individual that they need to learn about and help them understand, hey, we're with you to create more of a stronger team. Is there besides I know social media with Twitter, how we connected, and LinkedIn, is there any other way or recommendations that people can stay involved with your work and also get be able to use the Social Brain Toolkit?
Well, that's right. We can actually, I can provide you with the URL, the web address, and we can link that to the podcast. And I think it's already been driven in the way that you've talked about with, we've got some of the universities like social workers and other university courses that are looking to use this program to create a foundational knowledge. It's only 2 hours. It's a start. But as you say, we've got, we can get people looking at the website and the start of some of this process, then they can be aware of the other things that are out there, like conversability or the social ability. So if I give you and your listeners the web URL, you can go to there and have a look at what we've got, and that web will be updated over time as we start to put some more things online. So conversability at the moment, the longer comprehensive one, mainly for speech pathologists to work with other people, is still being finalised, but interactability as the introductory component is ready to go. Social ability, again, we'll start to put that online soon as well. So I'll give you the URL and people can go there and it will be updated as we progress our research.
Perfect. Well, yeah, so I'll definitely be sharing that. And it's amazing what you've not only been doing for the past decades, but how involved you are in obviously the technique that you're doing. Once again, it's all about teamwork and education. That is phenomenal. Wow. Thank you.
Thank you so much for allowing me to talk about it. It's really exciting stuff. And I recognize that I'm talking on behalf of many people, many researchers, many survivors as well. It's, as I said, it is an important team. So thank you so much for having me on to be able to just like learn and talk about this stuff.
No, ma'am. Thank you once again. And I know I've been asking you so many questions. We've been, because everything you're doing and this whole message, your passion is everything. It's phenomenal. But I didn't want to not ask this and be rude because you were taking time out of your busy schedule, especially the start of your day over in Australia. Do you have any questions for me at all?
Well, I think I do because, you know, you have your expertise and your platform. And I'm wondering what you think is the best way to get the message out about communication and brain injury and these kind of resources. You know, I'm wondering what you think as an expert in your field would be the best way for us to, you know, get the message out as well beyond what we're doing.
Well, that's a great question. I think honestly, and I was going to say, without if we didn't have those brief discussions beforehand, I would say exactly like we discussed is have certain individuals, whether it's their own family, it's other students, individuals that were, let's say if the individual had sustained a brain injury and had a job before but wants to try to get back into his own routine, have someone off of its workforce come and get involved, because that's going to help not only spread the word of education, but also the opportunity to really enjoy the app. I think also with the app, especially in today's world, where it's all about like how we elicit email and technology. No one uses pen and paper anymore. If they do, it means their phone must be dead or they don't have it on them. But nonetheless, I think that you not only creating this app, but I think also with having availability for others to experience it, share with others, word of mouth is everything. And that's really going to help hear not only about living with a brain injury, but most importantly, how you can also get individuals involved either during or like we discussed after with a Q&A. They get to perform their own actual personal research where they get evidence. They're hearing directly from one brain injury survivor. If you get more involved, everyone's going to have somewhat similar, but majority differently because all brain injuries are different. But the activity and most importantly, the certificate that they get at the end is a real pat on their back for them and anyone that has been affected by a brain injury that they've been involved with them.
Great. So I think we'll continue to utilize that recommendation. And if any of your listeners do manage to have a go at interactability and want to contact us anytime, send us an email. There's contact information. You can get my, I can have my contact details. I don't care if someone emails me. I would be very happy to have emails from people talking about the program or thinking about its use or giving us feedback. And you can do that through Interactability as well. So yeah, that's a great idea. And we'll make sure that we continue to do that as well. And people can contact me if they ever want to ask any questions at all.
Wow, Dr. Power, thank you once again, not only for all you do, but the difference you've been making, you're continuing to make, and most importantly, the ripple effect that is having with anyone who gets the opportunity to take your class, learn about your research, and most importantly, get involved with our community with this. You're leaving a powerful footprint everywhere you go, and it's an honor to know you, have the ability to learn more about you and your passion and your expertise, but also share your information with others to help make a positive change short and long term for everyone, especially those that are experiencing a brain injury.
Thanks so much, James. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I'm hoping that this will be a great opportunity for us to stay in touch, you and me, and we can continue this, you know, as we take things further.
Thank you so much, Dr. Power. Have a great day, and we'll keep in touch. Thank you for a phenomenal opportunity to learn and work with you.
Thanks, Ben. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. Wow, everyone. What an amazing show that was with Dr. Power coming all the way from Australia. As you heard, she gave some really great advice about teamwork and, most importantly, ways that either the survivor, caregiver, workforce, or any other community can get involved with their Social Brain Toolkit, a positive app that really helps you learn more about a brain injury or get involved with the survivor during or after for a Q&A. If you would like to learn more about Dr. Power, her app, or like she listed, get in touch with her to ask some questions. I would be happy and honored to connect you. Please contact us at tbionelove.com, and we will do everything that we can to outline everything you need and, most importantly, get connected with Dr. Power. Stay tuned with our continuous growth and follow us. One love.